I think he doesn't know what he's talking about. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Dietz, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Barry, as always, I'm glad to be with you and with the folks out there in the audience.
Well, we're glad to have you here today, Chuck, because it's days like this that I'm glad that you are on this program, because I really like bouncing ideas off of you, and I like being able to set and analyze things that I know full well don't sound right, but usually what I do is I usually put it past your filters, too, and we kind of start breaking it down and realizing, oh, yeah, they have no clue what they're talking about. This is another one of those examples, and it's a familiar example to our regular listening audience, because, honestly, Chuck, this may end up starting getting into our favorite categories of sites we have to visit in order to show prep. And what I'm talking about is MSNBC's The Cycle show that's on their network features a political commentator and cultural commentator by the name of Touré. We've talked about Touré before on our program. Usually it's because he's saying something totally off the wall. Last time it was about gun rights. This time, Chuck, in keeping with the theme week of it being the 40th observance of the decision of Roe versus Wade and the mass hysteria and delusion of our national body in thinking that that's the law of the land, well, you and I started talking about this earlier this week, and as we've been recording and looking at these articles and these news clips and things, we've started to see a theme getting ready to develop, Chuck, because I think what we both realize, and I hope our listeners are starting to realize this if they haven't already, is that the pro-abortion forces are losing, and they're losing the war because they lose it on logic, they lose it on science, they lose it on public sentiment. So, Chuck, if you're losing on that many fronts in a cultural debate, what's one of the basic things you've got to do in order to try to get momentum back?
Well, you've basically got to make up a story to get people to take another look from your viewpoint at what's going on. So what do?
Change the spin. That's exactly what you've got to do.
You gin up the statistics.
We're seeing this because we talked about the article on yesterday's program from the pro-choice woman who, well, I agree that life begins at conception, but so what? The baby's expendable. The woman's what matters. She's the boss. Well, that meme's not going to play too well except to hyper-feminists across the country. I don't think the vast majority of your what we call Midwestern sensibilities are going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, I guess that's okay. Then you can go ahead and just snuff out that life of that baby. That's not going to fly very well. But there's another meme that was kind of woven in. It was referenced in the article. And you folks, you can go to our website at principledpolicy.com and you can link to that article. We've got it linked up on our page. You can listen to our program if you didn't get a chance to hear us yesterday. And you can read the article that we were referencing. But we've had another, and this is Touré, our source of such great material, I'm going to say, who is a commentator on The Cycle on MSNBC, who is now spinning the new meme for the pro-abortion forces. And Charles, we could sit here and talk about it, but I don't think it would have quite the impact or quite the ability for our listeners to grasp what it is that's going on as we actually heard from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, before we start, I'm going to say this is the same man who, when we talked about this man and his opinions on gun control, it was all about saving the lives of the children. So keep this in mind as you listen to this. It's all about saving the lives of those poor children who he loves so dearly.
Brought us the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade and made me reflect on a moment from about 15 years ago when I was in a committed relationship with a woman who I knew was just not the one. She also nipped out, and then she got pregnant, and I was terrified. I've always known the importance of family and building kids into strong adults, and I know I would not be who I am if not for growing up under the watchful eye of two people who loved me and loved each other. I knew that pregnant woman and I were not going to be able to form a lasting family. She decided it was best to have an abortion, and days later she did. We did. And in some ways, that choice saved my life. I was not then smart enough or man enough to build a family or raise a child, and I only would have contributed to making a mess of three lives. Years after that, I met another woman, married her, and after we decided to get pregnant, I went to her doctor's appointments with joy. It was a thrill to watch that boy grow inside her, but I must admit during that second trimester, as we watched him move around on 3D sonograms, I saw how human they are at that stage, and my lifelong belief in abortion rights was, let's say, jostled. It was life colliding with belief system. I had to rethink my position, but in the end, I remained committed to being pro-choice because I cannot imagine arguing against a woman's right to control her body and thus her life. I believe in, as Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote, a woman's autonomy to determine her life's course. Yes, there is a reasonable and unsolvable medical debate about when exactly life begins, but I find something undeniably misogynist about the impulse to deny a woman's dominion over her own body and limit her ability to shape her life and impose another sense of morality on her. Family building is at the heart of nation building, and taking away the ability to choose means the ability to build lasting families is challenged. Richard Florida finds the higher a state's abortion rate, the lower its divorce rate. But even though abortion is legal, ever since Roe was passed, the right has been working not just to overturn it, but also to constrain it. Today was the 40th annual March for Life in D.C. In 87% of counties, there are no abortion providers, and in several states, it's nearly impossible to get an abortion. And over the past 2 years, 130 laws have been enacted restricting abortion rights and curbing the number of abortion providers. I want abortion to be legal, safe, and rare. But restricting access makes it rare for the wrong reason and drives many women to self-administered abortions that endanger their lives and their reproductive future. In a nation where 40% of children are born to unwed mothers, we are hurting our nation by making family planning harder. I thank God and country that when I fell into a bad situation, abortion was there to save me and keep me on a path toward building a strong family I have now. And I pray that safety net remains in place. People who have children when they're prepared leads to stronger children, stronger families, and a stronger adults, and a stronger America.
Well, check that dead silence there at the end was just the incredulity in me having to pick my jaw up off the table.
That was a pepper gun approach to false statistics, and really just blather. I took some notes real quick.
Yes.
He was in a committed relationship who was one who was clearly not the one.
Well, then he wasn't very committed, was he?
No, he wasn't committed at all. That's not a committed relationship. The fact that he lived with somebody and engaged in marital-type relations with her does not mean it was a committed relationship.
No, that's a conjugal relationship.
That's exactly right. It was a relationship of convenience, and the fact is that what happens very often when you engage in that act happened. She got pregnant. He claims that somehow his life was saved by murdering this unborn infant. How did he save his life? He didn't really explain it. He would have ruined many lives.
But instead, he just ended one.
Yeah, exactly. He ended one in order to save his own and his paramours. But here's the gist of what he said. It's okay to kill because life would be a mess if that baby were born. So in other words, it's okay to kill somebody if it's going to mess up your life.
Yeah, but just remember, though, Chuck, when he was talking about that particular instance, he didn't refer to it as a baby. It was the pregnancy or basically that. But once he said later that he got into the relationship with the person he wanted to actually commit to, and they got pregnant, it was that boy. And funny how human they are at that stage in his second trimester.
Exactly. And my take on that was humanity is based on appearance.
That's so, exactly what he's getting down to.
If it looks like a human, it must be a human. If we were still at the blastocele stage or down at the 8-cell stage, it's not really human. Again, arbitrary. And I like the fact that he came out with this rather goofy thing about this unsolvable mystery about when life begins.
You noted the same thing I noted in that, Charles. I had that written down. It's like funny how when it's inconvenient because the answer is going to go against what they hold, that we have to then spin it, well, it's unsolvable.
Yeah, exactly. It's an unsolvable mystery. No, it's not. Biologically, it's very easily argued that life begins at conception because that is when the two different strands of DNA come together and recombination occurs and a unique life is created from the sperm and egg of mother and father. That is the point of which a unique life begins. We can't play the game with implantation. We can't play the game with birth. We can't play the game at such and such a stage. It becomes a new, separate life at the moment of conception, period. That is the easiest, non-arbitrary place to put the beginning of life. And what do you know? It's the same place that the Bible argues is the beginning of life.
Oh, well, but remember, Ture's thanking God that his life was saved because he was implicit in a murder of another.
Barry, if I'd been in the room, I'd have moved as far away from him as possible.
Yeah, and listen to the sound of thunder coming.
Yeah, I don't think I want to be anywhere near you. This guy is self-defeating, although I'm sure he has lots of fans. People think he's a brilliant thinker. If you don't have your critical thinking cap on when you're listening to him, it all sounds very learned. But in fact, this guy is basically making arguments that have been long ago refuted. and are so transparently self-centered, it becomes obvious this is all about me, 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 I. Everything is about him.
Indeed.
And that is the bottom line on Touré's thinking. It's all about him. It's all about what's good for him. This pregnant woman was not good for him. Therefore, it was okay to end the quote-unquote pregnancy. In other words, murder the baby.
Right.
Let's put it in the terms that it belongs in. Did you notice it's misogynistic to deny that women are completely autonomous? Barry, is anybody completely autonomous?
No, Charles, nobody is completely autonomous, even the ones who think they are.
So where does this autonomy end?
And that's a very good question.
Well, let's talk about his statistical, shall we say, shortcomings. One I had to laugh about is at the end, and we're going to get at something that we talked about between shows.
Mm-hmm.
But one,
mm-hmm.
Safe, legal, and rare, the old Clinton line, safe, legal, and rare. Barry, 1.2 million per year is nothing like rare.
Not rare at all.
And safe? I don't know the statistic. We can find that. How many women are permanently maimed during legal abortions? It's very high.
Well, you know what? We may not be able to find that right off, but one of the statistics we did find, because when he's quoted Richard Florida, that raised my radar, Chuck, because I'm familiar with Richard Florida. He bills himself as one of the world's leading public intellectuals on demographic trends, economic competitiveness, and cultural and technological innovation. He's what they call an urban studies theorist who's a professor at the University of Toronto. Richard Florida is infamous for writing a book called The Rise of the Creative Class, where he argued that homosexuals were much better people than the rest of us because they were being more creative by being uninhibited, obviously, and that brought benefits to urban areas, you know, money and influence and creativity and the arts, etc. And so we should go out of our way and bend over backwards to support the homosexual agenda. Now, Ford is at it again, playing around with data and statistics, and Touré decided he couldn't help himself. That argument in there that Florida had said the ones with
the states with the highest abortion rates
had the lowest divorce rates, right? Well, I went over to the census, and I did a little digging around. Their data is a little incomplete, Charles, because what you come to find out is the seven states with the highest abortion rate for 1,000 women in the last statistics, and that includes states like Delaware, Florida, Maryland, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, and California, those are the seven states, also had the lowest rate of marriages per 1,000 people in that same time frame, and their rates of divorce were probably a little above average.
So basically, Touré is pulling the old bait and switch.
Yes, it is.
Sure, the divorce rate's going to be lower because the marriage rate is lower. It only follows.
That's right. But even that doesn't totally show, because it's showing that the divorce rate was somewhere around the hovered a little high, a little low, around the average, the national average of rate per 1,000. But boy, when you looked at the marriage rates, those seven states were near the bottom, with the exception of Nevada, which is an outlier because of quickie weddings in Las Vegas.
Right.
So we take the outlier out. All the rest of those six states had among the lowest marriage rates in the country. I think there was only one other state that was in or as low as these six, and that was Mississippi.
Yeah, well, here's an interesting thing that I thought about, and this is one of the thoughts. We're about out of time here, but I also looked at some of the states that had the very low marriage rates. They had people who got married at a much later age. Somebody said, well, of course, they're more mature. They know more what they want. Also, but you forget that very often they're using abortion as a birth control tool
in order
to keep from having to get married. So in other words, the abortion rates are really high and the divorce rates are some kind of low. I guess they're slightly...
They're within the statistical mean, let's put it that way.
They're around average, but the marriage rate is very low. So big shock, we've got people who are waiting longer to get married and using abortion as a birth control tool.
And now, Chuck, before we close, I want to hit on the meme that Touré and others have pushed in this clip, and others you're going to hear push. He said, the ability to build lasting families is challenged if we don't have abortion on demand. That's the meme they're trying to hit, that abortion builds a stronger America, because look at all of these families that were saved because they were able to slaughter the innocent unborn who was conceived because of their irresponsibility.
Well, Barry, it's a sad, sad argument. And really, I'm not shocked that someone like Touré, who we've seen stoop below, has stooped to the level to make this particular kind of argument with this statistical manipulation. But I guess we shouldn't be surprised that someone who would, out of self-interest, look aside as their child was murdered would then attempt to defend it by creating phony statistics. We're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.